Sunday with Miriam on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by SuperValu Insurance, looking out for you and yours with our new life and mortgage protection insurance.
Well, writer and former RTE News journalist Sinead Crowley has a new book out, and this time it's more mystery than crime, more romance than gritty detective work. It's a story that crosses the Atlantic and it spans 100 years. It's called A Maid on Fifth Avenue and it's published by Hello Zeus. Sinead, good morning. Welcome back to your old home.
Thank you very much. My car found its own way across this morning.
Excellent. Listen, I loved this book. Explain the twin timeline story in A Maid on Fifth Avenue and how it moves from Ireland to America and back again.
Yeah, so there are two women in the story. One of them is Annie, and it's back in the 1920s in West Kerry, in beautiful West Kerry. And she's a woman who, she's the oldest daughter in the family, and I suppose like a lot of oldest daughters, she feels like she has to solve everybody's problems, but she's aware that this isn't for her. West Kerry isn't for her. She's standing at the edge of this country looking out, saying there must be another life out there. There's something out there for me. And she heads off to be a maid on Fifth Avenue in the 1920s to amazing kind of golden age New York and all the excitement that's there. And I very much wanted to write about somebody who wanted to go. I think there's a lot of books about people who are kind of crying in the boat. But this is a young woman who really wanted to go and saw all these opportunities. But she has left something behind in Ireland and that drags her home. So she has to return. And then 100 years later, there's another young woman called Emer who is a film editor in Los Angeles. During COVID, when times are tough for people who kind of live on their own and work on their own, and she's just feeling a little bit burnt out. So she returns to West Kerry, to her family home in West Kerry in 2022. And at the very beginning of the book, bones are discovered underneath a tree, underneath a fairy tree in the village. So we find out over the next while what unites the two women and indeed what is the story behind those bones.
Because there is, as you say, the significance of the hawthorn or fairy tree, isn't there?
Yeah, and I mean, West Kerry is one of the most beautiful places in the world.
I have
to say, the most beautiful place. Yeah, we'll be absolute there. And there is Dríocht and there's mystery about being there anyway and about the water. There's a lot of surfing in the book as well, and the water and the coast and the cliffs and the coastline. And the hawthorn tree, a lot of areas of Ireland would have that myth about it, that it's a fairy tree or that you don't disturb it. And what was wonderful about putting it in this book was it could physically link the two timelines, because you have these two women 100 years apart, but it's just the one tree. You know, and it's there, it's the constant throughout everything that's happening in the country and that happens to them. So at the beginning of the book, we find these bones, and then why are they there and what links the two women?
And your own grandmother, she did make the journey to America, didn't she?
She did. So I suppose she inspired the book. I always have to be careful to say inspired rather than based on, because there was no major mystery, no bones, thankfully, in the family past. But she did. She left rural Roscommon a little bit before this book is set. She would have been in the 1910s. In fact, she was in New York for 1916. So she kind of missed all the drama here and she was in New York. But she came home. And she came home to marry my grandfather, luckily for me. But what fascinated me about the story, when I was young, we just knew Granny had been to America, and that was very interesting. But later I thought, can you imagine coming back? Like, can you imagine leaving New York, electricity, you know, all that glamour, and coming back to rural Ireland then in, say, about, I think, 1918, she would have come back. So just that sense of coming back, the change, and then Annie, as I say, didn't want to come back but was compelled to come back by something that had happened. So really, again, just the sense of somebody who has kind of made the break and gone away and is loving America but is forced to come home and what happens to her.
Now, you researched the lives of servants in New York in the 1920s. The Irish girls, they were referred to as Bridgets, and they saw everything, didn't they?
They did. And my granny was called Bridget, actually. She was Bridget Kane at the time, Bridget Crowley then later. So, and they were all, so the maids were called Bridgets because so many of them were called Bridgets. And I read this great book called The Irish Bridget. And women would actually talk about their Bridget, you know, and did you have a Bridget? And what's wonderful about that book and a couple of others I read, and a couple of podcasts I listened to too, was that the maids, you know, the society women thought it was their Bridget and they thought they were in control, but actually the maids knew what was going on. The maids had a wonderful network as well, where they would meet after mass and maybe say, oh, don't go working for her, or, you know, and they were highly valued because they were English speaking, of course, highly educated, so everyone wanted one. So they actually had their own little network, and that's in the book too, you know, that you would go to mass or you'd go to a dance and you might meet up with people from home at the dance and they'd be chatting about who to work for and who not to. And I picked up some lovely nuggets, like in one of the houses, they actually wallpapered over the doors. So the women looked like they were appearing out of nowhere because the society women wanted you to be, they wanted all the work done, but for it to look invisible, you know. So you had all these women. But at the same time, just to go back to, imagine leaving rural Ireland and suddenly being in this place of polished floorboards, carpet sweepers, you know, all these things could help, the electricity. And there was other maids as well. So I know very little about what my granny did over there, but I do know that she spoke about having learned bits of German from some of the other girls in the kitchen. So I've worked that into the book too. And I think that would have been a case that the poor German girls who didn't have English might have been put doing peeling the spuds, you know, whereas the Irish girls who spoke English might have been able to go upstairs and do a bit more kind of work with the family.
And you did a fair amount of research into the kinds of households we get on Fifth Avenue. I think Annie works for the Cavendish family.
She does. I made them up, but I suppose loosely built on, you know, the Vanderbilts or people like that. And they kind of built these chateaus. They built these amazing standalone buildings, incredibly opulent. And then at one stage she goes to, I suppose, a version of Long Island as well, to their family home. So massive wealth, you know, which again would have been extraordinary to these girls coming over and seeing it for the first time. And then you had life in New York too, which was so multicultural and so different, and the different foods and that. So in the book, a lot of Annie's friends are hanging out with other maids and they're meeting them in mass, and as I said, meeting them at the dances. But Annie has this desire to see other things, and a couple of times she says, why would I go to the dance with the people, you know, the Kerry Association dance? I actually want to meet people from other cultures and other places, and that's what she does.
And you actually make the point that there was a kind of, I suppose, a nascent feminism at the time, but some of the women fighting for their own rights, they never really considered the rights of the women like Annie, who was working for them, making their meals, cleaning their houses.
Yeah, so the daughter of the house, for example, would consider herself to be a modern and very modern, and that kind of Gatsby-esque, you know, idea of putting on the clothes or getting a bit more modern and so on. But at the same time, of course, they have women working for them. And later in the book, Annie meets Meg, who again is a feminist and a writer and, you know, is drinking in coffee shops and, you know, living with another woman and living this life for herself. But they have to turn around and realise actually there's a whole other subculture of women who are working for us, and they encourage Annie to write, actually. So Annie, as a lot of people would have been, you know, from Kerry at the time, highly literate, highly educated, loves reading, loves writing, and they encourage her to write a book about her experiences. And that's something else that did happen, that, you know, women would write letters home maybe and tell all these amazing adventures and experiences that they were having. So,
and of course, without giving too much away, and you mentioned there, Annie has an Italian friend called Elena. Their relationship deepens in the book, but they don't really have the words or the understanding that we would have now. Sure they don't.
Yeah, so Annie meets Elena and they do fall in love, and she has no notion what's happening to her. And funny, I did a lot of research writing this book, and one of the things I did send it to a woman I know who's married to another woman, and I just said, look, would you just read it and make sure that I haven't got anything wrong here? And one of the things I had done was I had brought them together too quickly, because what I hadn't realised was not only, like, they wouldn't have any notion that it would have been possible to fall in love with another woman, you know, that this even existed, particularly two women. So they meet each other, they're completely blown away by what's happening, but they don't have the words to express it. And then when they do realise what's going on, they think they're the only people in the world that it has ever happened to. So again, there's great freedom then when she meets Meg later in the book and realises she isn't the only woman in the world who feels like this. But it wasn't something I planned on writing, actually. And this sounds very strange, but it is true. I actually wrote, one of the first scenes I wrote in the book was Annie having coffee in a diner. And that is something I had heard from my grandmother about the phrases they used to order. I think it was Adam and Eve on a raft, was two poached eggs and toast. And I wrote this scene and a waitress came over and poured her coffee. And I genuinely, that was all that was going to happen. The whole scene was supposed to be about her in the diner. And the waitress poured her coffee and they kind of looked at each other. And I started writing more about this waitress. And suddenly I realised, this is where the story is going. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of how writing happens sometimes. You don't plan it. But the minute I realised what was going on, her leaving Ireland made sense, because I'd written all these scenes about her wanting to leave Ireland and not knowing why and feeling different and feeling out of place. And suddenly when I met the waitress, I went, that's it. That's why you wanted to go. that's why it happened. So it wasn't a plan.
That's so interesting, actually. It's almost like the character or the narrative took you somewhere you hadn't necessarily planned to go.
Yeah, I don't plan any of my books. I just start. I start with a few scenes or images and keep going. So again, that scene in the diner was just, it was just about a bit of fun. Her, you know, ordering coffee and tea for the first time. And the next thing, that's where I took it.
And the second protagonist, Ema, her story, of course, is more recent, as you said at the beginning, post-pandemic. She arrives in Kerry from America. What's she doing there?
Yeah, so she was working in America during COVID. She's a video editor, so I liked it. There wasn't too much research there. Yeah. I was able to, it was a little bit easier to write her. And she's just burnt out. She ended up having to work at home and, you know, be very intense in a one-room apartment, and she just needs to get out. She comes home to Dublin, but that doesn't work out, so she goes to the family home in West Kerry. And that was great fun to write. We actually, as a family, went down to Kerry during 2020, you know, when nobody could travel abroad. The first time we left Dublin was to go back down to the Maharees in that area, and we did some surfing. I brought my two kids surfing for the first time, which is something I used to do years ago, and really I was just thinking, this has to go into a book, you know. So this is the more fun element of the book. She's back down, she learns how to surf, she meets a surf instructor. It's all that kind of modern day Kerry that we all know and love as well goes into the book. And again, she finds out what has happened to her family and his family over the last 100 years.
And Maureen is messaging to say, congrats to you, Sinead. Don't give away all the story details. Readers like a surprise. I won't, Maureen, I promise. But you went down this time the romance route, more mystery than crime, like your first few books.
Mm. Yeah, the first three books were police procedural, and loved writing them as well. But then I suppose I'm not a full-time writer. I have a day job, and I think that gives its freedom. It's difficult to find the time, but at the same time, you have the freedom to kind of write what you want, because you're only writing a book every couple of years. And as I said, this came about as a series of images. It was the image of somebody coming home after COVID, coming back to live in Kerry. Again, this image of somebody going to leave. So I wrote the book it was meant to be, rather than saying it has to be crime or it has to be something else. But with me, there is a bit of romance in it, which is great fun to write, particularly the modern day, particularly the surfers down in West Kerry. But at the same time, there'll always be a mystery, or there'll always be, call it crime, call it mystery, but there'll always be that twist at the centre of the book I write, because that's what I like to read, and I want readers to keep turning the pages, and that's what I like doing. So
you were, of course, the arts and media correspondent here in RT in the newsroom. First of all, do you miss the buzz of a newsroom?
I actually don't, in a good way. Mm. I loved being here, and just driving out this morning was so strange. Like, I grew up in this building, you know. I came in here at 24 and left a marriage and two children later, you know, 26 years later. So the happiest memories are in this building. But it was time to do something else. Mm. And a great job came up. I work for Commissioner Mann now, the new media regulator. It was doing a big recruitment over the last 12 months. So that came at the right time for me. And I was about to turn 50, which was a kind of a big deal. I applied for the job at 49. And I think there was a sense that do it now or maybe don't do it again. So absolutely loved my time here. But yeah, it was time to do something new. So I'm really enjoying. I'm enjoying having a regular life. Yeah. News is amazing, and I love news, but it is relentless, you know. Yeah. And there's no 9 to 5. You go when the story breaks, and that's terrific fun for a long time. But after 25 years, it's kind of nice to know
what you're
doing. It's nice to wake up on Monday and know what I'm doing on Thursday, you know.
And you're loving Commissioner Mann. What's your role in there?
I work in media development. So what's really interesting about Commissioner Mann is it's both a regulator and it works in media development. So I'm on the media development side, working in areas like gender equality, diversity, Irish language, sustainability of the media industry, really interesting things, and meeting loads of people I knew in my job as media correspondent. So I'd still be dealing with the Arts Council, with Screen Ireland, with all these bodies, but just from a different side of a desk. So it wasn't like I had left to do something completely different. You know, I'm still dealing with a lot of the same people, but just with a different hat on. And it's really interesting. I love it.
You're also, I always feel, very collegiate when it comes to other Irish writers, particularly women writers. How important is that network to you?
There's an incredible network, particularly of Irish female crime writers. And we know that they're all, you know, it's really having a moment at the moment. There's WhatsApp groups and Facebook pages and all sorts of things, because it's a lonely business, not just in terms of writing the book. But I think when you write a book, most people who don't write books say, isn't that great now, fair play, you wrote the book. And that's kind of the end of it. And aren't you lucky it's out? Whereas actually, it's quite stressful. And, you know, getting it into the shops is stressful. And when do you launch it? And do you have a launch? And it's like any other business. There's the nitty gritty of the business that only the people in the business will understand. And I'm sure people say to you, isn't it great being on telly? You know, and that's it. Whereas, you know, there's times you want to give out or, you know, there's parts of the job that you want to talk about. And writing is like that. So you actually need your gang that you can talk about publishing and launches, and it's this length or it's that length, and so people are incredibly supportive, and there's always room for one more, you know, which is nice as well. It's not a sense of that there's too many of us around. There's always room for one more. There's so many good female crime writers. I won't start naming them, but lots of them are branching out now into writing scripts as well, and you know, you're seeing long form pieces on streaming services or indeed an RTÉ written by Irish women. So fair play to them.
Well, I loved the book. Sinead Crowley, thanks a million for coming in this morning. A Maid on Fifth Avenue. It's published by Head of Zeus. So thanks so much for coming in. I wish you the very best with it.